Welcome, investors, to the Absolute Return Podcast, your source for stock market analysis, global macro musings, and hedge fund investment strategies. Your hosts, Julian Klimochko and Michael Kesslering, aim to bring you the knowledge and analysis you need to become a more intelligent and wealthier investor. This episode is brought to you by Accelerate Financial Technologies. Accelerate, because performance matters. Find out more at accelerateshares.com.
Welcome, podcast listeners, to episode 99 of the Absolute Return Podcast. I'm Julian Klimochko.
And I'm Mike Kesslering.
Today is Friday, November 20th. Pretty chill week in the markets this week. We did have a number of deals in the SPAC space, some interesting M&A news as well that we're going to get into today. Let's start with the blank check deals. And that EV, the electric vehicle space, is still hot. Had a couple of them this week. Electric vehicle company Arrival announced a deal to go public through SPAC CIIG merger. We're going to chat about EV-related SPACs. Are they in a bubble? Blank check company Longview Acquisition strikes a merger deal with healthcare startup Butterfly Network. What does the market think of this deal? And lastly, wanted to really close the file on Taubman Simon. They made amends, recut their merger deal to avoid going to trial. We're going to chat about how much the price was cut, how this compares to precedents, and is this ultimately a fair deal for shareholders? But let's start out with electric vehicle SPACs. Those two fit like hand into glove, don't they? It's just been a crazy time in SPACville with all these electric vehicle deals. I swear I'm starting to lose track. But the new one that we had this week, in addition to some other rumors that we're not going to get into, but perhaps next week's podcast, we'll see. But a definitive deal that was announced this week, British electric vehicle startup Arrival, really just continuing that trend of electric vehicle companies going public via SPAC. They announced a business combination with the blank check company CIIG Merger Corp in a deal that values Arrival at $5.4 billion, which is significantly higher than their last valuation, which is super interesting dynamic. But it really shows that perhaps there's a lot of competition to get this deal done, and perhaps CIIG merger was the SPAC that was willing to assign the highest valuation in order to get them to sign on the dotted line. A bit of background on Arrival. It competes with Rivian, which is another EV company. They won backing from Amazon in the electric van space. They actually received a massive order to the tune of 10,000 vehicles from UPS, which obviously is huge. Shows proof of concept and future sales. UPS is also an investor in the company. Additional backers include Hyundai, BlackRock, Kia. Its two main products are buses and vans. Now let's get into the price action on this one, truly exemplifying that SPAC pop that we do like to see. And we do like to see this one because we're long both the CIIG shares and warrants that we bought at a unit at a discount to NAV in the Accelerate Arbitrage Fund. So some disclosure that we are long this deal, and CIIG shareholders, the market loving this deal. Stock popped 65% this week on news of the deal. And really, this is the story of the market remaining keen on electric vehicle SPAC deals and the bubble discussion that continues to pop up over and over again. And you got to remember that the entire SPAC market is roughly $93 billion in market capitalization, and electric vehicle deals are, you know, maybe 10% of that. So call it roughly $10 billion. And so there's a lot of speculative activity in there, but it's not a large dynamic of the market. For example, if we look at the market leader, Tesla, which has a market cap of about $500 billion, of which Elon has about 20%. So call that a $400 billion market cap of the most speculative, you know, bubble money in the world, accounting for $400 billion. So if we compare that on a relative basis on the speculative money in SPAC EV stocks of $10 billion, you know, it's hard to go too crazy on that, because on a relative basis, Tesla is like the SPAC EV bubble, if there is one, times like 40, right? What are your thoughts on the SPAC EV market and this Arrival deal specifically?
Yeah, you alluded to some of the competition, and I just wanted to point out that, so the enterprise value of the deal, $5.4 billion, that's assuming a net cash position of $600 million, and that's from their investor presentation.
So certainly, the equity, certainly they'll get no redemptions, it seems, where the price is right now.
Yeah, there certainly won't if it keeps up. And so the equity is being valued at $6 billion. And now keep in mind that Arrival actually raised $118 million last month, just in October of 2020, from BlackRock and a few others, valuing the equity at that time at a pre-money valuation of $3.6 billion. So let's call it a post-money valuation of $3.7 billion-ish. And when you look at this deal being struck, it implies, you know, in the range of a 60% bump in valuation from one month ago from investors. So really great work from the Arrival team, but it really speaks to the competition within SPACs for deals, that they were likely, as you mentioned, Julian, willing, this sponsor team was willing to give them the valuation that they wanted. And hey, if you're able to get that, great on the management team. And it really, it's something that we've talked about before, where an IPO process, this company, number one, would be very difficult to IPO. We've talked many times about that being pre-revenue, but as well, you're just negotiating as a management team. You're just negotiating with one counterparty on your valuation. Mm-hmm. So you're likely able to come to a wider range of outcomes as opposed to the IPO range of outcomes. They really narrow it down, and it's kind of a tried and true process. When you look at the company itself, Arrival, as well, they're really looking at a different niche than some of these other electric vehicle companies, with the city buses and delivery vans, most, I guess the main anchor order being from UPS. But as well, they plan on using these micro factories that are closer to areas of demand. They say that they could be deployed anywhere within 6 months using existing warehouses and infrastructure. So I really don't know how successful this approach will be. It's a little bit unproven at this point in time, and to me it just seems like a logistical nightmare. But if they are able to pull it off, I mean, they're touting their process is a lot less capital intensive and a less of a carbon footprint. But if they are able to make that work, kind of the modular development, it could be quite innovative from a production standpoint as well. So it'll be an interesting deal to watch.
What I find fascinating is this valuation lift that you talk about, and likely that CIIG was willing to give them the highest valuation. But that's, at least in the short term, is looking to be a smart decision, because CIIG shares at another 65% on top of that. So clearly the market thought that was a cheap valuation, and they're bidding it up pretty significantly. But nonetheless, another electric vehicle deal to add to the pile of what seems like dozens at this point. But certainly this is a hot one, folks. So certainly if you're involved, be careful, because it's going to be volatile and you're in for a wild ride, no pun intended. On to the next one. Longview Acquisition, the SPAC sponsored by hedge fund veteran Larry Robbins of Glenview, they announced a business combination with Butterfly Network, an innovative digital health company that's working to enable universal access to superior medical imaging. Now, this is an interesting one in terms of their technology. They have this device that you can basically plug into a smartphone, and the device provides medical imaging, like diagnostics that you can be portable with. So it's a super cool concept. The company Butterfly Network was founded in 2011 and works to enable universal access to superior medical imaging. And the fact that I found interesting is that 2/3 of the world has no access to medical imaging. So this seems like a good play for emerging markets, where they perhaps, you know, don't have easy access to these sort of diagnostics. Now that they have it in the form of just an easy to use mobile device, then that seems like a massive market. They indicated that the total addressable market of ultrasound is $8 billion, so certainly a sizable total addressable market opportunity here. The company has raised more than $400 million from investors, including Bill and Melinda Gates and Fosun Industrial. Some financial details. 2020, they're expecting revenue of nearly $50 million. They expect that to grow to over $300 million by 2024. So they are forecasting a revenue CAGR of roughly 65%. In terms of valuation, this SPAC deal values Butterfly at $1.5 billion, comes with $175 million PIPE financing. That valuation puts them at 10.6 times 2022 revenue, which I suppose going out to 2022 on a new business or early stage business is somewhat speculative, but nonetheless, the market liked it. Longview stock rallied over 25% on news of the deal just today. And what we have been seeing lately is, you know, that momentum tends to carry on a go-forward basis over the next at least few days or weeks. If we look at the one we just spoke about, CIIG, it rallied significantly on the first day, but continued to rally in the subsequent days after that. So have a look at Longview. Got to disclose that we are long this one as well in the Accelerated Arbitrage Fund. I mean, it seems like we're long everything in that fund. We have about a north of 105 positions at this point in SPACville. So what are your thoughts on this interesting healthcare deal? I wrote on Twitter over the past few months that I thought LGVW, Larry Robbins SPAC Longview, it was really just, I wouldn't say disrespected, but no one really cared about it in the market. The shares were just trading at around $9.70. And its NAV was like $10. So if you bought it and they didn't even get a deal and they liquidated it, then you're guaranteed a 3% return. And it seemed like no one cared about it, but those who did care were nonetheless rewarded with a 25% pop today. So a pretty good one.
Yeah, getting paid effectively to hold an option on Larry Robbins' capital allocation or ability, not necessarily capital allocation, ability to find a suitable acquisition target, which seems like a pretty good proposition. And mm-hmm. as such, I mean, this was our largest SPAC position. So, I mean, that certainly as a shareholder certainly feels good to see when it's up 27% on the first day of trading. And Julian, you did mention the kind of momentum effect, I guess, after announcement of some of these hot deals. Mm-hmm. And I would like to note something that we were looking at all throughout the day today is that 27 million shares traded today in wow. Longview as well, which is about 2/3 of their float. So that's an interesting dynamic as you see the float turnover in the days after announcement.
And we're seeing it turn from hedge fund arbitragers to more so retail speculators.
Retail speculators, as well as there are some, I'm sure, some longer-term investors as well. So right. a combination of the two,
yeah.
Certainly more long-term than a traditional merger arbor SPAC arbitrager.
What I find interesting is that Kathy Wood's ARK has been buying one of Chamath's SPACs, the one that did the deal with Opendoor. I believe that's IPOB. So that, like, you do have active managers coming into these post-deal at a massive premium. I believe Opendoor is trading at like 100% premium to NAV, and they're still coming in and buying because they like the opportunity.
Yeah, especially, and it, I mean, it's a premium to NAV, but if you have a view on the pro forma entity, perhaps it's buying at what they perceive to be a significant discount. I mean, that's right. I assume what the rationale would be. Mm-hmm. Interesting to note, in both deals that were announced that we highlighted today on today's podcast, that 100% of their current shareholders are rolling over their equity positions. We really like to see that in a SPAC deal. You love to see that, you know, you don't have existing investors keeping their skin in the game effectively. But as well, you have the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, Bailey Gifford, the, you know, pretty high, well-renowned investors. And what I also found interesting is that when you look at a lot of these transactions, it is very much assumed that the sponsor team is just, you know, they're just the capital and a shell for the company to go public. Mm-hmm. But when you heard Butterfly's CEO talk about Larry Robbins and the whole Longview team, they really talked about Robbins, his connections in the industry, especially within the healthcare industry, that was really expected to help them moving forward, and that he's already opened up some doors for them. So I think that'll be something interesting as we move forward looking at sponsors, is just having the vehicle when there is an oversupply isn't enough, where you really need to be adding something more of value to investors. You look at anybody that's talking to any of Chamath's SPACs. I mean, right there, he is a marketing machine. So that's something over and above the actual shell
that they
offer. And some of these SPACs do have something to offer. So end of the day, we love to see the bump in price and hope that it continues to move forward as it churns out of their float.
Yeah, that SPAC pop truly exemplifying this upside optionality in SPAC arbitrage that we constantly talk about. And I always coined the phrase, the heads we win, tails we win big. And that's really just the name of the game in SPAC arbitrage, where you can get this great equity upside double-digit return, but with the risk profile of treasury bills. So, you know, it's a great trade that obviously we like, and we're fully loaded in our arbitrage fund and within SPACs. But Mike, you really hit the nail on the head with respect to Larry Robbins. The guy has a great track record and a fabulous network. So I just couldn't believe that stock was trading so cheap, because it seemed highly likely that he would strike a good deal. And certainly it appears that he did. You also have a good point in that, you know, they're just not looking to earn their promote and leave. I believe Robinson's hedge fund, Glenview, is participating in the PIPE financing. So he's actually paying $10 per share for stock and looking to add value within the corporation's growth. So that is another super interesting aspect of the deal that investors should take note, because, I mean, that just adds to the confidence.
Absolutely. And just one last point on SPACs in general. I mean, a ton of issuance this week. I'm sure we'll be talking about it in future podcasts, but having the John Malone SPAC, and I'm also a big Malone fanboy, so both of us are very excited about that. Then you had rumors as well over the last couple of days of Perella Weinberg, the investment boutique investment bank, potentially looking to list via SPAC. And the only thing I'd like to note on that is I find it shocking that of all the investment bankers involved in the deal that would be both advising Perella Weinberg and then within the company itself, that there has been no leaks on which SPAC is looking at them as a target. So I find that quite interesting. Typically investment banker and lawyer's lips are usually a little loose in revealing some of these details. So it's interesting to note.
Yeah, it's cool that you mentioned the John Malone SPAC, because not only am I a big fan, but I think it really legitimizes the asset class. And you've heard a lot of criticism, some of it perhaps warranted, but some of it just kind of hating on the asset class. But when people see John Malone is doing a SPAC, then, you know, the peanut gallery just shuts up, because, you know, they can't really say anything after that, because the guy is an absolute legend in business. So it'll be super interesting to see how that one trades. And when it does, we'll certainly be interested. But getting your hands on an allocation will be incredibly difficult. So wish us luck. Wanted to tie things up on some M&A news. We spoke of the recent drama between Simon and Taubman, who initially struck a deal pre-COVID for Simon to acquire mall owner Taubman at $52.50 cash per share. COVID hit, mall shut down. Simon did not want to pay that anymore, so they sued to terminate the deal. They were about to go to court on Monday of last week, and the Sunday evening before, recut a deal at $43 cash per share. That was 18% lower, but certainly it seems like it's larger than we've seen these COVID precedents. For example, Forescout, Advent, we saw Tiffany, LVMH, which was just a low single-digit price cut. Then we saw Advanced Waste Disposal, which was roughly about 8%. And I believe Advent Forescout was 12%, if I'm recalling correctly. Don't have my notes on me, but certainly we have seen an elevated number of repricings for deals that were announced pre-COVID, and the buyer threatened to sue, but none of them actually made it to court. They all settled for a price cut, which on the target side, I mean, Taubman's stock was trading in the $30, mid-30s range. So, you know, it makes sense to take $43 per share. It's certainly understandable that Simon would want a lower price and that the board of directors of Taubman would agree to that, just given the rapidly changing dynamics in the mall ownership space, given the pandemic and its probably adjusted values over the long term, and just removes the uncertainty of litigation. Even on a file like Tiffany or Forescout, where they said their business had fully recovered by Q4, still, to get rid of that litigation, typically it's worth a few hundred basis points price cut. So this deal, this recut deal, will save Simon about $800 million. So definitely worth the price of trying to go to court and making a bit of a mess of it. But nonetheless, they're back on friendly terms, looking to close the deal quickly. Taubman shares rallied 8.5% this week. On the news, obviously, we're happy. We are long in the Accelerate Arbitrage Fund. We're basically just talking the book this entire podcast, aren't we?
Yeah, it certainly has been. We promised that it won't be like that every episode. But yeah, this has been a rocky road for investors. And I think one thing that really factored into this is, number one, you're just seeing most of these deals get recut, but as well, reports really did seem to indicate that the judge, as they were preparing to go to trial, was really, really pushing both sides to settle out of court. Right. And that's something that you typically do see in these scenarios, where the last thing that the judge wants is for this to go to trial as well. And when you look at it, this as well, it's an interesting dynamic too, where the Taubman family is actually staying on as a 20% partner. So I believe that, yeah. I assume these sides have overall reconciled. I mean,
certainly some sour grapes probably at the Friday meetings.
yeah, a little bit. But you know, what, Julian, what do you think? Do you think it was, you mentioned where Taubman was trading. Do you think that did have an impact on the actual amount of recut that happened, the discount that they took, that being in the high double digits? Do you think that was factoring in, or what do you think the main factor was for why it was repriced so much lower than some of the other ones we've seen?
Yeah, certainly the share price is a good targeting. Right? So it gives an indication of shareholder expectations. And ultimately, it's the shareholders that vote for or against the deal, and the board of directors work for the shareholders. So at the end of the day, the board gets a proposal at 43, or perhaps, you know, they met in the middle, and they look at their share price at 37, and they say, look, you know, that's a good premium for shareholders, better than what the market's pricing in. So we might as well remove that risk and reward shareholders and see where it goes. So yeah, I certainly think that provides a directional, you know, target for where they should end up, because if the stock's trading at 37, the board isn't going to argue to and accept a repricing at 30, right? Unless they're like on the verge of like bankruptcy or something that the shareholders don't know. So nonetheless, they do want to see it higher than the current share price. And certainly some large shareholders were probably calling them up and rattling their cages, be like, look, you got to settle this thing in the low 40s. It's a nice premium to where the shares are at, and we'll vote for it and be happy about it. So certainly the shareholders were shareholder. I think it's a good result. All things being equal, certainly Taubman was facing a tough slog if they did lose in court. And the other interesting thing to consider is this concept of material adverse effect or material adverse change, same thing, MAE or a MAC clause, which is really notoriously difficult to prove in court. In fact, in the history of M&A, it's only been utilized once to get out of a deal, and that happened a number of years ago, where the company was actually, you know, in a just kind of a in long-term decline and did face, you know, something completely material. So in all of this court litigation that we've seen in M&A over this latest deal cycle from COVID, it really tells the strength of the definitive merger agreement, how difficult it is for buyers to get out of it. And not a single one was able to, you know, prove a material adverse effect in order to get out of a deal. On basically 100% of them, they were able to settle. On the ones that we mentioned in today's podcast, they all settled at a recut deal price. On other ones, they just parted ways and the buyer paid the target a significant chunk of change. For example, we saw on Gillette Satellite, they accepted about $70 million, which was a large portion of the market cap, to part ways. And also Rifco got a multi-million dollar settlement after their buyer walked away. I guess there is one that remains outstanding, and that is the Cineplex deal, which fell apart, but the buyer, I mean, they're nearly bankrupt. They don't have any money, so that's perhaps why they didn't settle, is because they just don't have the money to. So they have no choice but to, I guess, gamble it out in court.
Absolutely. And before we wrap up here, we do have a special event coming up next week. I mean, we are coming to our 100th episode, so we're coming to the century mark. So we have had a few more interviews with special guests over the last little while here, and we're hoping to keep that moving forward into the for the next 100 episodes.
Yes, so certainly tune in to number 100, and in fact, all the podcasts. Definitely provide us some feedback. We love to hear it. Questions, concerns, comments. Definitely send us an email. Check us out on Twitter. Mike, what's your handle?
It is M_Kessler.
And you can find me at Julian Klimochko. You can check out more podcasts at absolutereturnpodcast.com. Definitely leave us a review. Tell your friends, colleagues, family about us. And until next week, we wish you all the best in your investing. Cheers.
Thanks for tuning in to the Absolute Return Podcast. This episode was brought to you by Accelerate Financial Technologies. Accelerate, because performance matters. Find out more at accelerateshares.com. The views expressed in this podcast are the personal views of the participants and do not reflect the views of Accelerate. No aspect of this podcast constitutes investment, legal, or tax advice. Opinions expressed in this podcast should not be viewed as a recommendation or solicitation of an offer to buy or sell any securities or investment strategies. The information and opinions in this podcast are based on current market conditions and may fluctuate and change in the future. No representation or warranty, expressed or implied, is made on behalf of Accelerate as to the accuracy or completeness of the information contained in this podcast. Accelerate does not accept any liability for any direct, indirect, or consequential loss or damage suffered by any person as a result of relying on all or any part of this podcast, and any liability is expressly disclaimed.